Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revolution Radio. This is Dr. Kate, broadcasting tonight from Wyoming. And we're very pleased to welcome our guests this evening, Commander Charles Kirshner and Attorney Mario Puzo, and I believe one of them is on the line right now. I'd like to bring you in. Is that Commander?
This is Commander Kirshner. This is Commander Kirshner. Good evening.
Good evening, Commander Kirshner. Welcome. And how have you been? I'm very glad to have you here this evening.
Well, I've been fine. My grandkids are here for a week, so I've been having fun with that.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. For our listeners out there this evening, we are delighted to have Commander Kirshner and Mario Puzo this evening. I think this has been about the fourth time you've been on our show, maybe fifth time. And I want to start out by reminding everybody that this is a long-running case, and also now that it's going to be moving to the Supreme Court, it's going to be very expensive. And we really would like you, if you possibly can spare some change, to donate to protectourliberty.org. Thank you for that.
That's protect OUR in the center, protectourliberty.org.
Yes, protect
some
or
people,
liberty
some
is not
type
exactly
an
correct.
R, some people.
Yeah. I put your ad on my blog, but I need to talk with you about making a direct link. But again,
sure.
For our listeners this evening, I just put in a link to a post that I did today, which is basically a review of where we've been. And just to catch up, again, this case now has been appealed, and the appeal was denied and so forth. But the three major arguments that the government is trying to use to dismiss this case are lack of standing, the Article 3, lack of Article 3 jurisdiction, and the failure to create a remedy in which the case can be resolved. You know, I'm going to just basically shut up and bring on Mario. Is that you?
That's me here, Dr. Kate. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you both for coming. We've got a lot of questions. I'm just going to go ahead and let you just go ahead and start this evening. Just some guidelines, a brief update, your successful defeat, or basically the judges running away from fining Mario, and the next steps that you see happening. So just with those guidelines, go ahead, gentlemen. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, we're at the stage now of filing a writ of certiorari with the U.S. Supreme Court. And basically that is asking the court to take the case. It's discretionary. There's no right to have the court take the case. So now we went through the stage of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. We had the order to show cause, you know, where I had to respond as to whether or not I should be assessed the damages and costs. So that's all behind us now. And so, you know, we had a meeting, you know, with our the clients, and of course, you know, Charlie, he's with us tonight. He'll give his input on it. But we all got together and decided, okay, we're going to now go to the Supreme Court. And it's a difficult road, very difficult, because we've seen what the lower courts have done. In the Kirchner case, basically we're faced with having to show that the court should intervene in this kind of question. You know, we're looking at standing in that respect. You know, I think that, you know, the courts are wrong when they say that. I think the courts are wrong.
This is a legal question of interpretation of three black letter words in the Constitution: natural born citizen. And we think the court has a rightful role to make that, to answer that legal question. I was just going to throw that out, Mario.
Yeah, the problem is that it doesn't matter how important a question is. I mean, there's case law on this. You know, basically the court takes the attitude that it doesn't matter how important the parties feel the issue is. It could be of the gravest constitutional question that it's faced. And the court basically says, unless you show that we have jurisdiction, that the role of the court is to intervene in this type of situation. See, it's basically looking at it in terms of what is the role of the court in our three-part form of government. You know, we've got the judiciary, legislative, and executive. And the lower courts have taken the attitude or the opinion that this is not for the court to get involved in, that Congress has to resolve this. And that's why the Kirchner case is very unique in this respect, and it's the only one that was ever filed this way. We've also brought an action against Congress, and that's why I was so upset.
If I could interject, Mario, just before you move on about Congress, though, is that the lower court is following the rules set up by the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court could look at this case and say, we have to modify the rules. That's one aspect of it. The lower courts are following by rules established by the court. The Supreme Court has established these rules.
Yeah, we don't know, of course, how the court's going to rule, but I'm just saying how it is. You know, the lower courts basically say that – I'm sorry?
That the rules as they stand now for the lower courts are that you've got to show personal injury.
Well, yeah, that's the famous standing requirement, but mm-hmm. you know that could all be just put aside by the Supreme Court. They could, you know, standing is really a vague concept. We don't know how the Supreme Court would really act to this. We really don't. So that's why we have to, find out by filing the writ. But I think that the Kirchner case presents a unique situation because we have Congress as a party to the case,
right.
as a defendant. Now, the courts say, well, Congress has to fix this. That's what the courts have been saying, that it's not something for them. And that why, therefore they don't want to get involved. They don't have a stand, there's no standing or it's a political question. Now, of course, what we saw in our case, in the Kirchner case, that it's there's a standing question. But the thing with Congress is that we contend in the Kirchner case that Congress acted illegally, but by confirming an unconstitutionally qualified president-elect. So Congress acted, and they acted illegally. So how can the court then say that it's up to Congress to do this, if they already acted and they acted illegally and they refused to act further? So, we've got the checks and balances in our system. The court is supposed to be there to correct errors of constitutional infringement, by any branch of the government. So that's why I think that we have a good shot just on the congressional issue that we have in the Kirchner case, which was not in the Burr case. I was so upset by the finding of, well, even on the blogs, they were saying that, the Burr case was exactly like the Kirchner case and that sort of thing. And I went through all that with the Third Circuit. I mean, they're nowhere near each other in terms of, we'll get into it, but they're totally different, totally different.
Right.
But anyway, that's what I just wanted to start with that.
They actually said in the Burr case, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mario, that in Burr's case, Congress could act just to fix this problem. They actually said that, I believe.
Yeah, that was in the district court.
Right. But we filed after Congress had illegally acted and before he was sworn in. So it's judicially ripe from that point of view, too. There's so many differences about this case.
Yeah, we'll get into that. I still won't get into that, but there's so many differences. But anyway,
may I just ask a question? I heard you say, Mario, that you're in the difficult place of basically answering the question: should the court intervene? So does that mean, in some respects, that the legal material that you submit to the court will start taking another tact as to why they should intervene, or am I reading too much into that statement?
Yeah, well, first of all, you have to satisfy, one of the reasons why the court should grant certiorari. And, I'll give you an example. Let's say there's a conflict in the circuits, and you need the Supreme Court to resolve this conflict. Okay, so that's one of the reasons. Now, we don't have that in the eligibility issue because all the lower courts are basically saying the same thing. Okay, and there isn't really a lot of law on the circuit level, not a lot of it, but basically they're all saying the same thing. It's a general grievance, and that that everybody's injured the same. But what's funny is that not one of the courts ever told us what this injury is. If you think about it, if you read the decisions, they say, well, if everybody's injured the same in this, but they never tell you what the injury is.
like Mario, to give an example, supposing our Congress and our usurper president said arbitrarily, we're no longer going to have a First Amendment. We're all equally injured, so the court can't intervene because we're all equally injured. That's how absurd this argument gets.
It's not even the law. That's not even the law, that if everybody's injured, nobody has standing. I went through this in my argument with the Third Circuit. I cited the case law, Supreme Court cases. Basically, they say it's not a matter of everybody's injured. If you, the plaintiff, can show that you are injured, it doesn't matter that everybody else is injured. That's really
The DOJ is arguing this, that we're all equally injured, so therefore you don't have standing.
Right.
So far, the courts have been buying that.
Yeah, but just that statement alone right there is not a correct statement of the law. Because, again, it's not a matter of that everybody's injured. It's a matter of whether the plaintiff can articulate an injury. Okay? If you can allege, sufficiently allege in the complaint – that you have suffered an individual injury, you know, individual to yourself. And one thing is, in the Kershaw case, we clearly articulate individual constitutional rights that have been violated. And again, this is based on life, liberty, and property. And none of the other cases ever did that. They just had like a vague notion of, well, Obama's not qualified. And then some of the ones that we saw where they said, well, you know, like the Orly Pace case, for example, where the Cook? I forget now the name, but you know, he didn't want to Rhodes, for example. Okay, well, she's not going to deploy.
It was Major Cook, and there was a Captain Rhodes.
Yeah. Rhodes was the one that in Georgia. Okay, for example,
he got sanctioned on.
Yeah, with the sanction, but you know, basically that one there, where it wasn't that the plaintiff was arguing a constitutional right of any sort, I can't deploy. I'm sorry, Charlie.
Protection under the law is one of our constitutional rights that have been violated. They investigated McCain at the request of the citizens, but they didn't investigate Obama. They didn't vet Obama, so that's an equal protection violation of a constitutional right. Correct,
yeah, so,
Mario?
Yeah, we have the equal protection argument. We also have the Fifth Amendment that I explained. In other words, we articulate individual constitutional rights that have been violated, and that goes to the question of protection. Okay, I mean I've argued this in both levels, at the district court and in the Third Circuit, and neither one of those courts ever addressed my argument.
The statutory violations of the law that Congress conducted the joint session illegally.
Yeah, that's the procedural part that we have in the case. But basically, then, you know, getting back to the question is, you know, how do you satisfy the court to get certiorari? So it's not a matter of the circuits being in conflict here. Okay, so basically, the only chance that we have to get certiorari is that we would have to ask that there's an important question of federal law that has not been but should be decided by the Supreme Court. Okay, that's really the key, you know, important federal question. You know,
never been adjudicated what a natural born citizen is as applies to the president in Article 2.
Right. And whether this particular individual is valid or not. You know, I mean, you know, of course you have the question of, you know, what is a natural born citizen? And then of course you got to look at putative President Obama. Is he a natural born citizen? And in the Kershaw case, we have a two-part argument. One is that he cannot meet the definition of a natural-born citizen because his father was never a U.S. citizen, and that's based on the original definition of a natural-born citizen under Vattel and natural law.
He wasn't even an immigrant. He wasn't even an immigrant to this country. For people listening, not only was he not a citizen, he wasn't an immigrant, he wasn't even a permanent resident. I mean, he was an alien sojourning in this country.
Just excuse me, just a second. Commander, could you speak a little bit louder or get closer to your mic?
I'm sorry.
No problem. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just wanted to finish that one thought. So it's again, the definition for natural-born citizen, and then number two is that he has yet to conclusively prove that he was born in Hawaii. You know, that's the other part of the case. So we have to convince the court that it's an important federal question that has to be decided. It's never been decided before, and they should take the case on review.
Yep, I was just interjected there from the point of view of the listening audience who may not know, is that Obama's father was not only not a citizen, he wasn't even an immigrant to this country. He wasn't even a legal permanent resident of this country. He was just an alien, a foreign national here, sojourning for a period of time while he went to college.
Yes.
What I have to ask here is, you know, I'm thinking of all the materials that you've written and how that, in my view, but it doesn't matter because I'm not an attorney or judge. I mean, you have articulated those injuries and you've also articulated how important this question is. I guess I'm just going to ask the question, why should the Supreme Court look at this any differently, and will they send it back? Will they chastise the courts underneath for not dealing with this? You know, it endless work that you have done, Mario and Commander, on this effort. Just excellent. So help me understand how this argument is really that different.
I'd like to throw something out there before, you know, Mario says anything. I think this is the best, most steadily and solidly built-up case being brought to the Supreme Court. The best. We went through all the steps in the proper order.
I agree.
The writings are extensive, well-documented. Mario has brilliantly outlined the history and the merits and the arguments why standing should have been granted. Nobody skipped a step, like I believe Mr. Berg initially skipped the appeals court and went right to the Supreme Court. So they threw it right back to the Third Circuit. So we've done this step by step methodically. We wish we would have gotten there a lot faster, but our goal has always been to get there. Now we're there, but we have a well-prepared, what do you want to call it, a wealth of information. It's been a lot of brain power has been put into the issues involved, and Mario has done a brilliant job compiling a well-documented, well-laid-out case. This is probably, I guess I'm biased, but this is the best case being brought to them today.
I agree, and I must be biased as well, because I completely agree, which is where my question comes from. Excuse me, go ahead.
So is Mario?
Yeah, well, something else to that, though, we have to understand that this is a writ of certiorari that we're presenting. We're not presenting a stay application, okay?
That's true.
Now, yeah, so there's a big difference, okay? A lot of the cases that went there, well, I shouldn't say a lot because there weren't a lot, but, you know, among the ones that went there, it was just a stay application. There was never a writ of certiorari presented. And, you know, to get the court to stay the election, I mean, that's a big deal, okay? But then if you don't file a writ of certiorari, then you never really, you know, gave yourself a chance.
A lot of the other cases, we're suing Secretaries of State too, and this is not a case where we're suing a Secretary of State for not doing their ministerial duties.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of problems, and again, this is not a criticism of the case. It was just, you know, the cases were rightfully filed because they were trying to stop the election, but, you know, you have a problem because, again, I mean, I've said this many times, and I've also argued it in my briefs, that a person has a constitutional right, a First Amendment right to run for office. Well, even if he's not a citizen, you know, even if he's not a natural-born citizen, you can't stop that person from running. So, you know, I mean, the case is doomed to fail if you're going to try to stop somebody from running. So you got to really know the exact procedure in something like this. And again, our case, the Cursor case, is very unique because we waited until Mr. Obama was confirmed by Congress. So in other words, you know, Congress acted. So and again, my initial statements were
the political process was over. The political process was done.
Yeah, and how Congress acted, we contend they acted unconstitutionally, because the Constitution gives power to Congress, limited power. Okay, so anything that the Congress does, okay, it has to have a way to be able to do it. For example, we all know about the Commerce Clause. Okay, and we all know about the necessary and proper clause. Okay, and like for the president, for example, the take care of the laws clause. You know, he has a lot of powers under that. So, you know, anybody in government, when they do something, they've got to be authorized by the Constitution to do it. Okay, now that, of course, that includes Congress, like I said. And you know, if Congress is going to be confirming the president-elect, they got to follow the Constitution when they do that, or else they're not acting according to the powers given to them. And now, I'll throw this out. How can Congress confirm a constitutionally ineligible president-elect? They don't have that power. They just don't have that power to do that. So if they do that, they violated the Constitution. So then how can the court say, well, it's up to Congress to straighten this out? You know, when Congress, you know, they already acted illegally, contrary to the Constitution. You see? So, you know, I just don't see how the court can expect Congress to resolve this when they're done with it. They already, you know, just like if Congress passed an unconstitutional law, okay, and the court, you know, they'll strike it down. They don't say, oh, well, we're not going to get involved in this because it's up to Congress to fix it. So what, now Congress is going to go back and redo the law without the court doing anything? You know, like, you know, telling the people,
asking the prisoners to declare who's going to get parole from prison next week, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, once one of the branches acts, I mean, that's it. Then, you know, in our form of government, again, three branches, checks and balances. The court is there to make sure the Constitution is provided, because everything is the Constitution. Everything, okay? If you don't have the Constitution, then we no longer have our republic. That's simple as that. And if
that
the court
is
not going
held
to...
this country together. This glue,
yeah,
the glue that
yeah.
held this nation of immigrants together is that Constitution.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, that's why I think that we're not out of line in bringing an action against Congress. Absolutely not, because they acted unconstitutionally in confirming somebody who's never proven himself to be a natural-born citizen by at least, you know, as a minimum, showing that he was born in Hawaii. And, you know, we've all heard this about, oh, well, he already presented his birth certificate and all that. I mean, that's not true, because it was just a certification of live birth on the Internet, which Hawaii to this day has yet to confirm was even a valid image.
It was presented to cyberspace, not to anybody with any ability to determine its validity.
Yeah. I mean, again,
you know,
contemporaneous
laptop computer.
Contemporaneous birth certificate, which means 1961 document, the name of the hospital, the name of the doctor, that's the gold standard. That's what you need. That puts to rest the issue of where Mr. Obama was born. That's never been produced to Congress or to any agency, to any whatever, to the public. Okay, so how can you allow somebody to be the president when you don't even have that?
They violated the 20th Amendment. They didn't qualify him under the 20th Amendment.
Exactly, and that's a constitutional violation. And Congress
is not.
I was just going to say,
I think this is a really important point because many people have derided the case against Congress as basically ministerial duties, and those are not ministerial duties that they were supposed to do. They did violate the Constitution. So bravo for going forward on that. Just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, that's a really important point because – again, the court keeps saying that it's up to Congress to straighten this out. But again, I don't want to repeat myself, but you know, they did their thing. They acted unconstitutionally. So how can we expect Congress to fix this at this point?
Even though that's
controlled by the political parties, they are no longer being controlled by the Constitution of the United States. They are being controlled by the political parties and doing the political parties' bidding. And they violated the Constitution on behalf of the two major political parties in the 2008 election. I firmly believe that, and the facts show they did it.
I agree, and you know, they did it with malice aforethought. Just, you know, how I feel about that. But there's
that
something.
They went the fastest. That was the fastest joint session that I can remember. It was
mm-hmm.
the shortest, fastest, and it was conducted illegally. They left out statutory law requirements to get it done so fast.
So with this, couple things on checks and balances, I just wanted to throw this out because I've been reading a book by Martin Babbitts called The Illusion of Freedom, and one of the illusions is that the only system of checks and balances we have are the three branches of government, which is, in my view, not exactly correct. The people are supposed to, and the states as well, have a check and balance. So this standing argument is going to have to fall. But here's where I get concerned: is
what
because
about the press? Where's the fourth estate?
Well, you know, really,
we're supposed to have one, but they're controlled by the political parties.
That's
too.
Correct. That's correct. So here we have a system. We're in a system right now where we know that the judiciary is extremely troubled. Obviously, the executive is, and the legislature is. So where are the checks and balances? And considering that you've asked for one of the remedies, which would be for Congress to go back and examine, where does all this fall now? And you know, if the judiciary bails on this thing, there are no checks and balances.
In our prayer for relief, we asked the judiciary to define what a natural-born citizen is
mm-hmm.
and then give that to Congress
mm-hmm.
to resolve the problem.
Okay.
Correct, Mariam?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct, yes, because we don't want to create a situation where the court is put into this box where it's acting alone and it feels as though, oh, you know, this is too much. You know, we're not saying, yeah, look, it's all up to the court. You know, we think that the judiciary should work with Congress on this, but the judiciary has to do something. It just can't say, oh, well, Congress is going to fix it, because Congress is not going to do anything. And surely we can't do this at the polls. We've seen that also in the court decisions, you know, saying that it's a matter of voting. You can't decide a constitutional question by voting.
The last 2 years, it was Congress saying, oh, the court's got to do something. And the court was saying, oh, Congress has got to do something. Well, in this lawsuit that I brought, we got them both in the same box, and they both have got to fix this together. They can't keep pointing the fingers at each other and saying, the other guy over there behind the tree, he's got to fix it, and the other guy behind the tree is pointing at the guy pointing at him, saying, no, it's your job. We got them both in the box, and we're saying, both of you together, fix this constitutional debacle that has been created by the fraud of the 2008 election.
Right, right.
How about some questions, Dr. Kate? We like questions.
Yes, I've got a couple right now. Since you filed, we have two new justices on the Supreme Court. What's the strategy when you get to the Supreme Court with regard to Sotomayor and Kagan?
Well, I'd rather not comment on that myself. I don't know.
Okay.
If
no, we don't want to go there.
Okay.
We don't want to evolve strategy ahead of time.
Okay. Let me quickly check in the chat room. Is there anybody else who has other questions? Okay. All right. Well, let's then.
Obviously, they have a conflict of interest, in my opinion. As a plaintiff here, I can say, in my opinion, those two justices have a conflict of interest because they were appointed by Obama.
Well, let's talk theoretically in a situation where there's clear. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. Are you there, Charles? Charles?
Here you lost him.
Can anyone hear me?
Oh, there he is.
Oh, yeah, we can hear you.
Hello,
can
Charlie.
He may need to call in again. Charlie, we can hear you.
I'm still here. Hello?
Okay. I think he's going to call back in. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. Let's talk theoretically. In a situation where there's a clear, compelling case for a justice or two on the Supreme Court to recuse themselves. Number one, has that ever happened before?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think it has. I can't remember exactly, but it has. And there's a bill pending to try to bring back a justice.
You're on, Charles.
Thank you. I don't know what happened. The line went dead.
Okay. Sorry. Excuse me, Mauro. Go ahead.
Yeah. There's a bill that was sent in to be passed, and I forget now the senator who put this up, but basically it's to bring back a justice who is on retirement in case you have a problem where justices have to recuse themselves. And so, I mean, that's rather strange, though, that it happened just recently. I don't know, you know, where this bill is at this point, but I do remember about a month ago reading about this, that there was something that was put forward that in case the court is suffering from this recusal problem, that therefore the court should be able to bring back a retired justice.
If I can interject, the quorum would be six justices. But the argument of the senator was that we shouldn't be deciding cases with six justices because, say, three had to recuse themselves, just hypothetically, that we should be able to bring back three prior justices and have them sit in and always have nine justices. So if one justice was recused, they would bring back one. That's what I understand he was trying to do, to always be able to try a case, or hear a case, rather, with nine justices.
Right, and then, of course, you got to see whether that's even constitutional, whether you can do that.
Right.
Because, you know, the Constitution doesn't really provide for that. So that's something that Congress...
These progressives are always thinking up things conveniently at the last minute to kind of like...
they never seem to run out of ideas.
Yes.
Well, we've got a caller.
This new anchor baby discussion, I think, is going to conveniently morph into redefining natural-born citizen the way the progressives want it.
I think that, you know, it seems to me that part of this delay is, you know, in all of this has been to get it in front of the Supreme Court, hoping first that it would never get there, but once it does, to go ahead and argue it and to basically make the case that he gets to stay where he is as in that position. Regardless, and I think that's going to be a mess, and I would really object to that, of course.
They can solve the anchor baby situation by just passing a law to define what under the jurisdiction thereof means.
Yes.
Although we have to remember that being a citizen is one thing and being a natural-born citizen is another. So, even though they address this question about, you know, whether... a child born of aliens, two aliens, illegal aliens, whether that person is a citizen or not, that doesn't address the question of whether he's a natural-born citizen.
If you look at the prior five times they tried to solve the laws for the 14th Amendment on anchor babies, they conveniently slipped the word natural-born citizen in there to define these people as natural-born, Mario. One parent born in the United States, you're natural-born. They were putting that stuff in there.
Then you have the question whether Congress even has the authority to do that, and I contend that it does not. Any kind of authority that Congress has with respect to citizenship is only naturalization authority. That's the only authority that the Constitution gives them. It does not give them the authority to define a natural-born citizen, and that makes perfect sense because, you know, then they could decide who becomes president. So, when the nation started, we started on the concept of a natural-born citizen, which was given to us by natural law, immutable, and binding. It's not given to us in a statute. It's not given to us, in a treaty of any sort or anything. And, you know, Congress is not given that power. It's just kind of like floats to us from some place, which, of course, you know, we know it's from natural law. And Congress can't touch that. I mean, if you really think about...
Inalienable rights. Like our inalienable rights, Mario, under the Bill of Rights, the same thing.
Yeah, think about this.
These are from nature.
Yeah, the founders didn't trust Congress when it came to the president. They didn't trust them because they thought there was too much influence, too much foreign influence, you know, too much deal making in Congress, too much foreign powers, you know, making their way into Congress and making all these deals and things, and they were going to put in a some kind of person or something, and that Congress was going to do this. So they took away the presidency from Congress, and that's why they made it separate, where, you know, he's not appointed by Congress. The Electoral College, which was another issue, but, you know, Congress does not put him in there. And, again, that's all part of that foreign influence and trying to make sure that
Congress cannot make a person qualified to be president. He gets that by from that. He's 35 years old. That comes from nature.
Right.
Right? He's got to be a natural-born citizen. That comes from nature. And he has to have lived in the United States for 14 years. Those are facts. Congress cannot change that. They can propose an amendment to the Constitution, but... The three-quarters of the several states would have to agree to it.
Yes. Yep.
Well, this makes the dialogue on Senate Resolution, 511 on McCain, even more egregious in terms of just absolutely fundamentally transparent in trying to wiggle their way around the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller right now. I'm going to bring the person online and for some questions, unless there's something else you want to just say briefly before I bring them on.
You can bring them on.
If you're out there, go to the website for the fundraising at www.protectourliberty.org. We're going to be getting into a lot of expenses in the next few month or two. In addition to the advertising, we got cost to prepare this writ of certiorari. It's got to be printed up professionally. A certain way. They don't just take it electronically like the lower courts do. So it's got to be done special paper, special cover, and printed and perfect bound and all that. So we need the help of the nickels and dimes of all the people out there to help defray some of the costs.
Yeah, if you're going to just, you know, have that second Starbucks during the day or coffee, just like put it aside. Because in each individual document, the cost of submitting that could be thousands of dollars. So it's really, really not kidding here.
40 printed and bound copies for a writ of certiorari.
Mm-hmm.
40
mm-hmm.
booklets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to bring on area code 901. Would you please identify yourself and where you're from, and then go ahead and ask your question. I've got you live right now, 901.
Good evening, Dr. Kate. So I really enjoy your show. And good evening, Mario and Charles. This is Mary.
Good evening.
Good evening,
Mary.
How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great.
It's been a long time since you guys were on the air. And I've got a question for you. And we can rearrange it depending on how you need to answer it. I've been playing with the numbers as far as how many cases are coming into the Supreme Court. And they're anywhere from, depending on what you read, 8,000 to 10,000 cases. And they go over them in conference. So I'm asking you, if you know the procedure, how they pick out the cases, or do you really think that the clerks are actually the ones that are picking out the cases at the Supreme Court?
Well, to answer that question myself, I do not believe that the clerks are picking out anything. I think that, I'm not there. I mean, I was never there in the past to see with my own eyes, but I'm going to have to, have faith in the judicial system, and it would be beyond imagination that the judges, the justices would not even, look at a case or whatever, even a minute or whatever. That would be just strictly the clerks or whatever. I think that, a justice has to, even 30 seconds, I mean, something. I mean, the clerk could prepare the case so that the justice can at least see what is the bottom line type thing. But the ultimate decision, I I'm going by faith now. Again, I don't have any evidence of this, but I have to believe that that the justices would be the ones who make the final decision. Although with tremendous input from the clerks, because my God, again, 8,000 to 10,000 cases. I mean, that's a lot of cases, and they have so much work.
Yeah, it comes out about 192 cases
a
week.
Of this magnitude is going to get a special notice. And the other thing is, Mario, the other cases that were at a stage and things, they only went to one justice who had to refer it to a conference. A writ automatically goes to the 9 justices, does it not? Or am I wrong about that?
Right. It's a whole different process. That's what I was saying before about this, stay application. This is not a stay application.
It's
an actual writ of certiorari.
We're not going to just submit it to, say, one justice, Alito or Thomas or Roberts. This a writ of certiorari automatically goes to the whole conference for a decision. Am I wrong or right?
That's right. We send in our writ, and then they can send in a brief in opposition. They don't have to. They could just say, we don't want to even send in anything. Now the court can order them to send in a brief in opposition, but the government here can just simply say we're not even going to send in a brief in opposition, which they might try to do that just to try to kind of like show that our case is even meritless. It doesn't even merit a response type thing. It's like this cavalier attitude.
Just another one of those B cases, what I mean? That's what they're
going to
say.
Yeah, it's below us type thing, so it doesn't even merit a brief. But, again, we can't control that. They send it in, then we can send in a reply brief, and then the court decides. If they decide Then they issue an order saying that the writ has been granted, and then we get into the merits briefs. Okay, so just so the listeners understand, the writ of certiorari is not the merits of the case. It's just trying to convince the court that they should take the case. If they take the case, then you get into the merits. So there's a merit brief, then there's a brief in opposition, and then there's a reply brief. Okay, and then once the court has everything, then they'll give you a schedule of oral argument and, you know, how much time you have and so on and so forth. And then you have the oral argument and, you know, you have a decision. So, you know, it's not a stay application.
Right. This is a completely different kind of case. Now, Mary, I got a book for you. Read the book called The Nine.
What?
It talks about the inner workings of the Supreme Court from people that have been there and have leaked a little bit.
Oh, okay. I have one other question, and this is in regards to what I saw on the show description, is that you were going to talk about any recourse, if any, if the Supreme Court doesn't hear the case, and I realize that may not be something you want to think about right now, but it was on the show description, so I thought I'd ask.
It was? Who put that there? I didn't put that there.
No, that's me, and actually it was in my blog where I asked the question, basically, if the Supremes act or don't act, is there another step?
Where do we go from here? Yeah.
Is that the last step? And that is really a philosophical question for everyone.
We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Consideration.
Right, we'll cross that bridge when we get there, right, Mario?
Yeah. I'll just say one thing real quick on that. I mean, you know, the people made our nation. Let's just leave it at that at this point.
Okay, well, I understand that. I wish you guys a whole bunch of luck. I've got my fingers crossed for you. I can't wait for this to be over, actually. And so good luck to you, and thank you so much for everything you two guys have been doing. And I hope the co-plaintiffs that, you know, besides Charles, I hope they're holding up too.
Yes, they are. They're also supportive.
They're all 100% in agreement. We're on the right track. We've been in this from the beginning, and Mario called a meeting to make sure everybody understood the next step, and we're all 100% behind the case, and we've been that way from the beginning. I'm in my third year with fighting this battle at this point. But
it takes a lot out of you.
I want to see it over, but I want to see it over with the Constitution and the truth winning.
Correct.
I don't want to see it over with the court punting. That's the word I was thinking of, punting.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, and have a good night.
Thank you, Mary, for your call. We've got two more callers on the line, and right before I bring them on, I know that we all know the Justice Department is defending Obama. Does that weigh in for him, against him? Because it strikes me as such a conflict of interest, and would anything regarding his representation ever come out of the Supreme Court or any court?
I guess you're asking the question whether the Justice Department should be using, you know, public funds to represent him. It's a very complicated question, because I'll tell you why. So there's two parts, and again, that even reflects on the Kirchner case itself. We sued Mr. Obama as a private person who was a president-elect, but not the president yet, still a private person. And then we sued him again as the president, because the reason why he had to be sued as the president was because now he has executive power. He has it, although we're not saying he has it legitimately, but he's exercising it. So there, that's where the injury comes in, because now, see, as a candidate, how is he going to injure you? He doesn't have any power. He can't do anything. You know, he can't make a decision to go to war, not to go to war, or, you know, pass the health care bill, for example, although he didn't pass it, but, you know, he was a motivator of it. So, okay, so then the question is, okay, we also sued him as the president, putative president, so now therefore can the Justice Department, of course, you know, they can represent the president in a lawsuit. So it gets complicated, because you've got this hybrid case. He's sued as a private person, but then he also is sued as a public person because that's when he has the power to injure the plaintiffs. Okay, that's our argument, that he's you know, you go back to the founders. The founders, it was their policy, not our policy, not Mario Puzo's, not Commander Kirchner's or any other plaintiffs. It was the founders' policy that the person to be president had to be a certain type of person so we can trust that person to protect each individual citizen and, of course, the nation, okay? So when he gets that power, you know, the question is he going to protect us if he's not a natural-born citizen? The founder said, no, we can't trust a person who's not a natural-born citizen to properly protect us. And that's the argument that we make, you know, for standing, okay? So then the Justice Department says, well, you know, you're also suing him as the president.
He wants my allegiance. I've got to believe that he's going to protect me, and I don't believe he will protect me.
Well, the founders told us that. Yeah, even the founders said that. They said, look, we don't want somebody who's not a natural-born citizen being the president of the United States because of an allegiance problem.
Right. Strong check against foreign influence. Look at Obama's and what he's doing in Kenya. My personal opinion right now, and this is my personal opinion, he's being blackmailed by those politicians in Kenya who said he was born there. He's sending over all kinds of USAID grants and money, God knows which way, to buy the silence of those people over there now. Who's going to blackmail him next? And for what? More than money? Loss of our defense capability? Why did he pull the missiles out of Poland? Because the Russians had something on over there and they blackmailed him. Who knows?
Yeah, this is
anyway,
very, very serious.
Something.
Go ahead.
Dr. Kate, it's very disturbing.
Right.
But go ahead, Dr. Kate.
The DOJ attorney, if we could have gotten by the standing issue early on in this case, if I'm not talking out of school, Mario, that's an issue we were going to bring up once we got to trial. We were going to argue that the DOJ shouldn't be representing him as an individual.
But it's mixed. I mean, the case is so intertwined. It's so intertwined between the private, you know, the private and the public, that it's almost, you know, virtually impossible to you know, to separate the two.
We talked, without talking out of school too much, we did talk about that early on, about if we did get standing, right, you know, to bring that up. But, of course, we're still fighting the standing issue. Here we are, you know, a year and a half, still fighting the standing issue.
Okay, I'm going to bring on another caller, area 954, with the last extension 3868. Please introduce yourself and ask your question. You are live right now.
Hi, my name is Jim, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I just want to applaud you guys, not just you, but the many others that are trying to accomplish the same thing, and I just think it's great how you've just hung in there and done the very best you could. It's an uphill fight, and it's always going to be that way. But I just have a few questions, and I don't want to take too much time here, so I'll just ask them and then maybe just give a short response or however you want to respond to it. Number one, why do you suppose the Republicans in Congress are totally silent about this?
Charlie, I know that you'll like to answer that question.
I'll answer that. I have a strong belief that Senate Resolution 511 was given to McCain to get rid of his citizenship, natural-born citizenship challenges, which were being made in the courts and in the New York Times and all kinds of blogs, make him go away on the basis that he would keep quiet about Obama's citizenship problems, and that the RNC and DNC were all both in on this, and that they agreed to give McCain that Senate resolution to eliminate his problem in return for silence on Obama's problems. I believe both political parties absolutely have a stranglehold on our Constitution, the detriment of the Constitution. And that was party politics. They wanted to run the man they wanted to run, and they were willing to sacrifice anything to get what they wanted, and that included the Constitution in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5. Now, that's what I believe. That's my
opinion, that makes sense. And you,
silence both parties, you also silence their friends in the press. Because
right.
Both parties have their powerful friends in the press. So when they made the deal, they told their friends in the press to back off, too.
What's your view about, you know, people like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and these other conservative announcers?
Beck knows it. Well, do you want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to interject something. I think that a lot of it, see, these guys, they were there before the election, okay? So now, if it's discovered that Obama is not eligible, I mean, you know, where were they? They were like asleep at the wheel.
Right.
You see? And not only these
game.
Yeah, not only these major media people.
In the cover-up game.
Yeah, and not only the major media people, like you mentioned, but also Congress itself. So in other words, it's like, oh man, you know, how could I blow something like this? How can we have an illegitimate president? So then they just basically, you know, try to, you know, whitewash the thing or just, you know, sweep it under the rug. Let the 4 years go by, let the 8 years go by, and then it's just history, and then everybody just forgets about it, and they don't have to suffer the embarrassment of not catching this thing.
There was another factual occurrence, though, too, in the under President Bush in the latter part of his, you know, his lame duck the last 3 or 4 months there. There is a documented meeting that was held. There's an affidavit up there in Canada with the Canada Free Press. The mainstream media talking heads were called to a secret meeting in Washington, D.C., and with their lawyers for the stations, and they were warned that you do not talk about this because of it was national security. They were fearful of race riots and anarchy in the street, you see.
Right.
So they shut,
well, that
they
plays
shut
into
down
it also.
There.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, too.
Bush and Cheney with the Department of Homeland Security orchestrated that. Again, why did they do it? Because of party politics entered into it.
They all sold out, right?
Oh, there's definitely
for the 2008.
There's definitely a race factor in this. I mean, even recently we saw it with Lieutenant Colonel Lakin.
The race card.
CNN said, and then you know they retracted. I mean, come on, we're 2 years past this thing, right? And we're still talking about that anybody who questions whether he's eligible is a racist. I mean, it's absurd.
Why was he vetted but not Obama?
There's the big question. I just wrote a letter to McCain, and I asked them that. You know, they wanted a, you know, your natural born citizenship was an issue. Well, why didn't you ask about Obama? You think I'll hear back?
But he took the easy way out and made a deal rather than debate.
Right.
But he knew
right.
If he were to challenge Obama in open debate in the primaries over natural born citizens, they know what a natural born citizen is, and neither one of them is clear cut. Obama
right.
is so far off, he can never be. But
right.
McCain could have argued certain things. He might have made it. But they didn't want the debate in the front of the public because they would have knocked them both out.
The natural-born issue is the most important, of course. Do you believe he was born in Kenya?
Obama?
Myself, I don't know where he was born. You know, that's my answer.
You've seen those two videos, haven't you? Michelle Obama videos on
yeah.
two
oh,
occasions.
Yeah, yeah.
She admits my husband was Kenyan, and that's his home country. I mean, who's lying here?
There's circumstantial evidence. There's circumstantial evidence that he was born in Kenya. I mean, you know, if you look on my blog, I call it a catalog of evidence. And,
yeah, right.
And maybe, you know, Charlie, maybe you can give the blog address.
Well, I was going to say, I'm a genealogist, and we go by the preponderance of the evidence. But this is overwhelming evidence that
overwhelmingly
he born, that he has
not
born
in Hawaii. Right, right.
Let me put it this way, that he has not conclusively proven he's born in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Right.
Except,
what do you think of this new passport coming out now?
That is all based on a breeder document, the breeder document being the false registration of his birth in Hawaii. So everything else was generated based on that.
If you've got
a falsely filed birth registration in a state, with that you can get a passport.
The other thing is
it blocked out the date of issue. That could have been given to him as a diplomatic passport after he became a senator.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you this. You know, the standing issue is based on, you know, those who are filing, are they being harmed? Well, this may be a stupid question, but doesn't the Constitution suffer harm when somebody violates it and nothing's done about it?
Well, yeah, it does, but the Constitution is not a party to,
right,
to,
it's
a,
not a person.
To a case. Yeah, it's not
so
a
it
person.
Has to be personal.
Yeah, it's
it
got to
be personal harm.
The person who's filing the action, which we call a party, okay, and of course a plaintiff is what the
yeah.
designation is. That person has to show that he or she has suffered an injury in fact, which is caused by the conduct of the defendant, for which the court can give you redress. You know, that sentence right there includes the elements of standing, of Article III standing as established by the Lujan decision. So you just can't say the Constitution has an injury.
Those are rules. Commander Kirchner says those are rules made by the Supreme Court, and they have created a set of situation where the lower courts can have totally allowed Obama to manipulate those rules to hide behind them to the point that
yeah.
he has completely usurped Article II of the Constitution.
Yep.
And I am hoping and praying to God that the Supreme Court will see this and say that the lower courts have been using the rules of standing that we created inappropriately for this type of case. This is a constitutional law interpretation of one clause in the Constitution that has never been adjudicated before, and the federal courts are the proper place to decide that.
Well, how are they going to do it unless they agree to hear a case on merit?
They have to, or we don't have a country left, sir. If they don't take this case and adjudicate Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5,
right.
they have thrown out three words of the Constitution and let it be the whims of the popular vote, popular opinion, and not fundamental law of our nation anymore. Next is the Bill of Rights, and everything else is gone.
But here's something else. If the court really believes in its heart, okay, quote-unquote heart, that a plaintiff does not have standing, okay, they'll justify it, you know, institutionally, they'll justify it based on the present state of the law that they should not be involved in it, that they would hurt the constitutional republic more
yeah.
than help it if they actually get involved because of some political, you know, problem they're going to cause by getting involved. So we have to convince the court that they should have a role, that they should be involved in this case, that the plaintiffs do have standing. Okay,
you
well,
how do you do that?
Chief Justice John Marshall in 1821 that gave them the justification. But you're right. The way the rules of standing are, a judge or a justice can take any case they want or throw out any case they want.
All
yes.
right. Now, the Alito, another attorney, and you know Orly Tates, she's went to Alito, and he threw it to the full court.
Yeah, but that was for a stay of her sentence.
Yeah, yeah. Let's.
Well, that's not right. That was for the sanctions. That wasn't for the. For
yeah. Let. Okay.
Let me, okay.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I don't want the listeners to think that. Well, just recently the Supreme Court turned down Orly Tates. Okay, you have to understand what the issue is.
Right.
I can hear you, Charlie. You have to understand what the issue is. First of all, the Orly Tates matter was on sanctions. And hello?
Yeah.
I'm here.
Okay.
Hello? Dr. Kate? Dr. Kate?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that we have to make sure your listening audience, Dr. Kate, understands that just because the Supreme Court recently turned down a review of that doesn't mean that there's no basis to bring this case to the Supreme Court. It was a totally
right.
different issue. It was where Orly Tates was trying to get standing by having Officer Rhodes, you know, not deploy to Baghdad or Afghanistan. I don't know where it was, but not deploy. And she was trying to get standing that way. And the court felt that was frivolous to try to get standing that way. Now, our case, the Cursor case, is nothing like that. We're not saying, well, we're not going to deploy and that's our standing. We have different arguments, number one. And number two, we don't have the same sanction problems. In other words, it was the conduct of Attorney Tates that the court attacked because, you know, the court
right.
felt that she was disrespectful. She was you know, using the court for a political platform type thing, you know, accusing the court of treason, calling the
right.
president names, and, you know, not making legal arguments. And even though the court warned her not to do it, and she kept doing it, and, you know, the list goes on and on. So that's
very smart of her, was it?
Well, you know, I'm not going to comment whether
we should not be talking about the
yeah.
other cases, because all we do is get to you know, debate amongst ourselves of the Patriots. So I've always said, but let's stay away from discussing other cases. All I wanted to say was that she went to the Supreme Court to get her sanctions stayed. She didn't go there
right.
for the merits
right.
of the case.
What about discovery for Colonel Lakin? You think he's going to?
Hang on. I'm going to interject.
I just want to. That's a criminal case, and that's not our case.
Yeah. I'm going to interject here and just ask Jim if you have any other related questions to the Kirshner case, because we have another caller online.
No, I don't. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling.
Right.
Okay, thank
you. Can I just say one thing? I fully
Please
support
do.
Lieutenant Colonel Lakin,
mm-hmm.
and I hope he doesn't get royally taken to the cleaners by the politicos in the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs rather than they should be looking at their oaths, too, like he is. I totally 100% support Lieutenant Colonel Lakin and his challenge and what he's doing. He's a man of great courage, and I hope God is with him and protects him.
Thank you. And I myself, I'm just wondering if the Army is going to throw that case out anyway because they don't want to deal with this, and it looks like
the
threat to tase him. Yep,
mistrial right there.
Yes, it is, and I'm wondering if that's intentional. We have another caller online, I believe, from Florida. So I'm going to bring you online now. If you have, please state your name and got a question, and we'll go from there. Thank you. You're on live.
Okay. My name is Richard McCurdy, and I'm from Florida, but I'm working in Nebraska at this time. I want to congratulate you guys for all your hard work. I want to thank you so much. But my main question is just a simple question, is that as long as there are things going on in the judiciary, as long as you guys are bringing up all of these cases and stuff like that, does that preclude Congress from acting just because you guys are there's a separation of the different powers, and they can't touch this as long as there's something going on in the Supreme Court?
No.
I'll answer that, and then Charlie, of course, you can add something. Absolutely not. They can act. I mean, under the 25th Amendment, Congress can decide that Mr. Obama is not capable or not able. Not because of a mental defect, but because of a constitutional defect, that he's not able to be the president. And there's a procedure there where the whole process starts, with the cabinet and with the vice president, and then it goes to the pro tempore of the Senate, the House, and then they have this, you know, hearing and so on and so forth. So, you know, they have the full power to decide that, and that's not an impeachment. And that's important because the courts have also said that you got to have an impeachment here. And again, an impeachment is if you committed a high crime, a high misdemeanor, not being eligible to the office of president. That's not a crime or a misdemeanor, unless of course you've committed some kind of fraud in relation to that. But again, just as a straightforward, are you eligible? That's not an impeachable offense.
Nullification of his election if he's ineligible.
So you could do it under the 25th Amendment. They have the power to do that, even though the court could be involved in some way. So that's my answer to your question. And Charlie, you want to add to that?
Yeah, even broader, Mario, and the gentleman who asked the question. Congress can hold hearings on anything at any time at any place. There's nothing stopping them from vetting Obama's eligibility right now, even if they don't move on to removing him. They can hold hearings to vet him and to get all his documents. There's nothing stopping them. They're hiding. They are cowards. They are cowards, and they are controlled by the political machinery of the parties and not the Constitution. Our country is out of control. The Congress needs All of them should be replaced, every single one of them who does not want to stand up for the Constitution.
Okay, now that leads to another question. Since Obama has made an executive order to protect his records and everything, can Congress, with the separation of powers, can they trump that executive order?
Well, you know,
Order is for records after he became the president, not before he was the president.
Yeah, that's been said on the internet and various arguments and things. That is a complete misunderstanding of what that order is. It's got nothing to do with his birth certificate or anything, you know, before he became president.
College records, nothing to do with college records. It has to do with what he does as president after he was sworn in.
Okay. So under what right does he have to keep them hidden?
Look, like any president. I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, I haven't checked every president.
$1 million and 100 lawyers.
Your question is, how does he keep his other papers or his presidential papers? What's your question?
His other papers. Like, how does he keep his birth certificate hidden? How does he keep his records hidden if he has no right under the executive order to keep them hidden?
No. The executive order has nothing to do with it. Okay, so let's just get rid of the executive order. Now the question is, how does he keep these papers hidden? Okay, very simple. Okay, you've got a media that allows him to do it. Number one. Number two, you've got a legal hurdle which is called standing, which you can't get. You can't get a discovery in court to do it. And number three,
you got a Congress. You got a Congress that allows him to do it.
Well, yeah, you got a Congress, and you got himself. You got Mr. Obama himself, his integrity, his values, his morality, whatever you want to call it, you know, his audacity. All right, he talks about audacity. I mean, you got to have what kind of audacity do you have to want to be the president of the United States and then at the same time say, I'm not showing you my birth certificate? I mean, that's quite of an audacity.
And
then how did you get away with that?
Millions of dollars of foreign money and hundreds of hired lawyers by that foreign money. That he used that attorney Bauer down there, that what's the name of that law firm, Coy or something?
Yeah.
Millions and millions of dollars and you know, all kinds of lawyers have been working on every nuance and subtlety to twist every law to his advantage and spending tons of money to do it.
Wow.
And if you don't have the media screaming and the Congress screaming about it, they get away with it.
Yeah, you gotta have the media. You know, it's almost impossible, unless you've got some kind of grassroots, well organized. Like for example, we've got this election coming up. Okay, now that's going to be a tremendous test of where we are as a republic. You know, what have the people learned in the meantime? And what do they perceive this problem to be? I mean, you know, when you listen to talk radio, they talk about all these different issues. They don't talk about eligibility, okay? And, you know, they talk about how we're going to have this revolution in this next election. You know, they don't talk about that it's tied to eligibility, okay? So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be a tremendous litmus test as to where people are, on this particular issue. That's just my personal opinion.
The media is trying to keep it like a balloon underwater. They're trying to keep suppressed how upset the people are at the grassroots. They're trying to make it sound like it's AstroTurf and all this other stuff. If my read of the American people is right and my little town here is correct, there's going to be a tidal wave on November.
And except for one thing, is that he certainly has empowered the unions to end the Acorn.
The corruption issue. If are we going to be able to have a fair election in the cities? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, listen.
Maybe Chicago voting might go nationwide this time. Remember, they delivered Chicago to John F. Kennedy. Remember that?
Yeah,
the cemetery, a whole cemetery voted. Maybe they're going to be able to do that nationwide.
Yeah,
you've got a DOJ that will not investigate election fraud. Look what they did with the Black Panther, the new Black Panther Party in Philadelphia.
Right, and what about all of the machines that are corrupt? You know, machine.
Well, that's another issue. But I have to I believe in the system yet. I think we have a chance to save the republic, and I'm going to keep fighting until I don't believe that anymore. And then I'm an old man. It's up to we the people after that to what's going to happen. We exhaust the legal system. Congress ignored us. If the courts ignore us, up until and including the Supreme Court, I don't think they will, but let's say they did. And it's up to we the people. And, you know,
it is.
And that's for younger people than me.
It's sort of like all bets are off. Was the question I asked in my blog.
What did John F. Kennedy say? John F. Kennedy said this. Now, this is John F. Kennedy's words. Those that make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just quoting what John F. Kennedy said. If they don't allow a peaceful resolution of this constitutional crisis, what are they creating? What are these people that are keeping the lid on, or trying to, down in Washington, D.C., creating in the rest of the country? They brought it on.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm
going to go. I just want to you to also
Mario
repeat
and I
that.
Are dedicated to the legal system. We're going to fight this battle in the legal system. If they fail us, up to others, you know, beyond.
Well, what I was going to say is that please repeat that web address again to donate so that I can help support you.
www.protectourliberty.org. O-U-R in the middle of it. Protectourliberty.org. Anything
okay.
You can donate, $1, $5, $10, $100, it would be sincerely appreciated.
All right. Well, thank you all for what you're doing, and I will support you.
Thank you, Richard, for your call.
Right.
Thank you, Richard.
I just wanted to say, though, after I quoted John F. Kennedy, Mario and I are committed to the legal system. We are going to try to resolve this in the legal system. All right, Mario?
That's correct. And that's what we've been doing from day one.
That's right. Place. And, the, you know, just in my introduction to you reading the text of your work, which reads like a primer on the Constitution, Mario, I have to thank you so much for educating me on this. But it really, I think that the critical mass is growing in terms of people's awareness of this issue. One of the things that I have been amazed in my research in the Constitution is that the founders gave us peaceful ways, lawful ways to do this. They gave us so many tools by which we could exercise our judgment and properly, and it's just gotten away from us as well. But I have to say that it's no longer possible for a congressman to say, "Oh, he put his birth certificate on the web," without getting a barrage of stuff. So that's over. That one's over. The sort of racist charge is over. So it really is getting to the point where the people know more than the Congress right now. And I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like they've sort of made the decision to all hang together. The media, the politicians, and so forth, it's just absolute wall of silence.
I think the
Beltway down there, the Beltway around Washington, D.C., is turning into a moat for them.
Yeah, the strategy was very simple, okay? The strategy was that it was just a speck of people that were on this issue and that nobody would believe them. It was, you know, they painted it as a conspiracy theory. They sent out so much disinformation and misinformation, you know, putting out these fraudulent Kenyan birth certificates, or, you know, who knows if they're real or not real, you know, these bogus stories, all different kind of things, you know, so people don't know what the truth is anymore. I mean, it was just a matter of hoping that it was a small fringe group and that nobody really cared about it, and that was going to be
mm-hmm.
the end of it. So
mm-hmm.
that was the strategy of it. Whether, you know, it's not a fringe anymore, you know, how many people want to know and how many people are going to do anything about it when they go and vote and what's going to happen, you know, I don't think they estimated that this thing would still be here now. You know, this
well,
you know, far
two-thirds
into
of the people question Obama. It was no longer a fringe. Two-thirds of the people have questions. And I think Mario and I and the co-plaintiffs played a part in that in filing the lawsuit. And since May of 2009, running full-page ads in the print media, in the Washington Times National Weekly, educating the people, publishing Mario's writings, publishing the issues, publishing the comments of the officials in Kenya, publishing the words of Chief Justice Marshall, publishing John Jay's comments about natural born citizen and the law of nation, the quote from the law of nation, and publishing information about Obama's father not even being an immigrant. When they swore him in, the pastor there that gave the speech said, "Oh, he's the son of an immigrant." That was not true.
Right.
They've been defooling the American people from day one. You've had the Congress, the press, and even there the clergy fooling America. This is outrageous. But we have turned the tide from a few percentage of people knowing the truth to two-thirds of America either knowing the truth or having questions. And all we want to do is have this question addressed, congressional hearings or a court of law, one or the other. We want full vetting of the truth with subpoena powers. We want these documents, as Mario says, contemporaneous 1961 documents. We don't want computer printouts of a vital record system that's been cauterized.
Right, or hearsay statements of Hawaii officials,
right.
From 2008 and 2009.
Yeah, they're trying to tell us who a natural born citizen is. Yeah, they're saying that they saw the vital record and he's a natural born citizen. Well, that's because they assume if a record says you're born in Hawaii, that makes you a natural born citizen.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in a position to give a legal opinion like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, plus, we don't know what they're looking at.
And same with Linda Lingle.
What's with her?
No, I was just going to say, none of them have been qualified to say anything. Linda Lingle, Fukino, any of those people,
mm-hmm.
none of them have been
Linda
qualified
Lingle
to say anything.
Linda Lingle told a lie. She said the press release said one thing when it said something else.
Yeah, right, right. That's why I titled my article Rope-a-Dope, because what could I say?
Their statements are hearsay, purely hearsay.
That's
we
correct.
Don't know what they're looking at. You know, when they say, "Oh yeah, I looked at the vital records file, and he was born in Hawaii," okay, we don't know what she's looking at. We don't know whether it's based on anything that.
Out of court.
Yeah, we don't know what it is,
Mario, because hearsay doesn't work in court, does it?
Mm-hmm.
No, they can't. No, they can't go there and testify and say, "Oh, he was born in Hawaii." Yeah, that's hearsay.
Yeah.
You know, what you can do is provide evidence. Contemporaneous evidence from 1961 that proves who was present. Who was present when this baby was born in Hawaii? Who was present? Okay, that's what the original birth certificate does. First of all, it's going to say he was born in that hospital. Okay, and of course, if the hospital is physically located in Hawaii, then he's born in Hawaii. But you're also going to have persons who were present, like the doctor or the midwife or whatever, That back then,
when
from 61.
When you said he was it's going to say he was born at a hospital. That's what they allege.
Yeah, but
we
don't know that.
Born at a hospital. That's right. We don't know that. We want to see that.
Yeah, because the hospitals have yet to confirm that.
Right, right. In fact, we have an election official that says that contemporaneously in 2008, their office called all the hospitals, and they said there was no record of Obama being born in any of them, or Stanley and Donald being there. They don't, we have all this contradictory evidence.
Sure.
That's hearsay,
sure.
too. But he's got his hearsay against the other side's hearsay. We want to get into a court of law where Mario has got 26 years of experience, 27 now, what is it?
27.
Yeah, they're not going to get away with this. Hey, I looked at the record and trust me, this is what it says. That isn't going to fly, right, Mario?
But that's hearsay.
Right.
We want the record. The record is not hearsay because there are exceptions to hearsay under the rules of evidence. And that contemporaneous birth certificate, that's like, the gold standard. That's not hearsay. Even though it's a document... even though it's a statement out of court, it's accepted as a valid piece of evidence because it was made at a time. And, nobody's going to, why would they want to make something up back in 1961? Which is the other point that I
want
to make. How they painted.
We want the college records, too, though. We want the Occidental college records. What did he say he was when he went there?
Yeah,
could subpoena the records through the State Department from Kenya. We want to know all the records they have in Kenya.
Yeah, but you don't need all that. You don't need Occidental and Columbia and all this sort of thing. All you need is just the one piece of paper, the contemporaneous birth certificate. Because if it says he was born in that hospital has medical records. When the mother was there, she was a patient.
Mm-hmm.
They have her. They took her blood. They took her her vital signs.
Yeah.
They've got monitoring
strips.
I'm sorry?
If he was in that hospital and those records exist, yes, they can provide that.
Yeah.
If they do provide that and there's witnesses and doctors and he's been playing this game all this time, then he's met the first hurdle of being born in Hawaii. But that is not sufficient. As you always said, that's necessary but not sufficient to be a natural-born citizen.
Right.
Is not sufficient.
Yeah, again, that goes back to my initial statement about the Kirchner case. It's two parts. One, where was he born? Two, even if he was born in Hawaii, he's not a natural-born citizen.
He'd be a citizen then, at least. He'd be at least a citizen, and then therefore the false claim charges against him for being an illegal alien and a senator, which one of the Byrd cases is that he wasn't even a citizen, therefore if he's proven that he was born in Hawaii and he has witnesses to the birth, doctors, and hospital records, well, that part will go away. Then he's a citizen, but he's not a natural-born citizen. Mary used to say that if you're going to learn one thing about this whole debate, there's a difference between a citizen of the United States and a natural-born citizen of the United States. Right, Mary?
Absolutely. You know, and it's right in Article 2, right there. Mm-hmm. Okay, at the time of the Constitution, you could be a citizen. After the Constitution, if you're born after it was adopted, you got to be a natural-born citizen. Again, you know, the 14th Amendment talks about a citizen. It doesn't talk about a natural-born citizen. And the reason why a citizen is important, because that's your entry level into the American society. And if you go back to the Founding Fathers during the Revolution, you know, they had to decide who were going to be members of the new society. Membership. If you read Vattel, Natural Law, whenever there's a revolution, even Pufendorf describes this. When there's a revolution, the people who were there at that time, they're the members. They make that new society. They're the citizens. And the children of those citizens are your natural-born citizens. That's Natural Law.
The children of the citizens are your natural-born citizens. They're the second-generation Americans. For the listeners,
right. It's
as clear as that. The children of citizens are natural-born, second-generation Americans. The first generation could have come here from Ukraine, swore allegiance to this country. They now have children. Those children can be president. The first generation can't. They can be a governor or a senator because they swore allegiance. They're citizens. But the children of the citizens are the natural-borns. They are, by natural law, the natural citizens of this country.
Wonderful. Charles and Mario, we have about 3 minutes left, and I had one question. I'm not sure you can answer it in this short period of time, but if the Supreme Court takes the case, it is not likely to drop it back down to another level. They will actually take it.
Well, the question is, take the case. What is the case? Right now, the only thing that's on appeal is standing. It's standing, not the merits. Okay, so now the court can simply say, oh, if they take it and if they decide in our favor, okay, these plaintiffs have standing, so now it goes back down to the district court. Okay, or, you know, if we can convince the court that they should decide the merits of it also, okay, in other words, what is a natural-born citizen?
Of not delaying this any further, we could argue, you know, we're going to argue that this is so important they should take it. And if they're going to take the case, we're going to argue also that they should also decide the issue, too, because it's going to go down and back up again anyway. Then.
Thank you. Everyone, listeners, please join Walls in Our Mind tomorrow night with Terry Dodd and Red Beckman. Mario and Charles, I want to thank you again so much. Please, everyone, save your coffee money and send it to protectourliberty.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and as always, my 100% support and best wishes for your work.
Thank you for all the writing you do. You are an excellent writer on the Constitution. I love to read your blog.
I echo that. Thank you, Dr. Kate. You're always
a
wonderful host. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and we'll have you again, and you take good care. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Dr. Phil. Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank
good night.
You. Good night.
Good night, Dr. Commander Kirchner. Bye.
Good night, all. Yeah,
making this melody. So I tried to put it in.